15 to 20 million.
Jump.
I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leader.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again, everyone, to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM, which, as you know, serves Philadelphia and the tri-state area. As always, I ask that you go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in here on 860 AM. And if they live outside of our broadcast area, they can listen live right now by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the front page. Now, as you know, every day that we put up a broadcast, we're on 7 days a week, and this one is the same. About an hour after the program, it will be posted on our internet site, and I do have a good number of people that let me know that they tune in, so I want to send out a special shout out to all of the people that tune in on the internet as well. Also, I'd like to ask that you send out the email. We send out a big number of emails every Wednesday morning to people who signed up. It's thousands of people. We send them to remind them that the broadcast will be on. And if you are one of those people, please do send that email to a family member and friends so that our family of listeners will continue to grow. Well, there was a lot of things happening lately, and I want to thank our panel members. Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store, who has a special event happening in his life in the last few days, and we're going to ask him to give us a report on that. Also, Larkin Connolly, the well-respected and always opinionated East Coast Vice President of SCORE, and Rich Logis, who is on travel today, and he sent us a picture of him with a big cowboy hat. So I hope that Rich will be able to listen either later today or tomorrow or some point over the weekend. Our engineer here is Henry Chaplinsky. And by law of the FCC, I have to tell you from time to time that I am Michael Blihash, and I am very happy to be your host. I would like to first say thanks to our guests who were with us last week on Veterans Day. Debbie Durix, who's the director of the development for the Veterans Multi-Service Center in Philadelphia, a great lady and a great person to send people to for all types of assistance. Also, Jim Jenkins was here for the 10,000 American Flags Project. And we also heard at the end of the broadcast, Joe Griffies, who is from the Welcome Home Veterans broadcast, a very well-known Saturday broadcast. And I thank Joe for all that he did to help with the Veterans Parade in Philadelphia and what he does to highlight veterans each week during his two-hour radio show. Last week, we also highlighted a special resolution, a proclamation that was presented by none other than one of our own, Senator John Sabatina from the 5th District of Philadelphia, representing the 5th District in the Senate of Pennsylvania. And I encourage you to read the proclamation. It's posted on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. This is the kind of stuff that slowly makes this more known, what we're trying to do. I was really pleased to hear from some of the other senators that the proclamation was read in the Senate. They all approved it. And I mentioned that I would put it up on the site for others to read and send it out to all of our supporters so that they would maybe send it to their state senators or House of Representatives in their local state senators in their individual states to get this thing moving more and more, because that's what it's all about. With me today, I have the very popular Mark Andel. And I'll tell you, Mark, you are an unbelievable man. When I got your email and I said, wow, this guy is on the run and he's created another 10 jobs in the Buffalo, Niagara, North Towns area. Mark, tell us a little bit about what you're doing. And Larkin, are you there, ready to go too?
Oh, I'm here.
Okay, Mark Larkin, because today could be a very interesting broadcaster. Some things came to my attention, and I need your guidance. But first, I want to ask Mark to tell us about his two special places there in the Buffalo area.
How you doing, Mike? Welcome, listeners. Mike, my team, again, team and family, I can't say enough. We pulled off two more stores. Our grand opening is this Friday. The stores are two more mall stores, roughly between 3,000, 4,000 square foot. One is the Boulevard Mall, which handles the Tonawanda's area, really. And then we got the Fashion Outlets of Niagara Falls, which is a really popular tourist area, which will, the people from out of state, out of country, come and visit the area. They go to these outlet mall. And both these malls wanted the Made in America store because of our presence and what we've done in the Western New York area over 5 years, which is really nice now. Now we've got the whole area. We made it convenient for everybody, every citizen of our area, to buy Made in America. And it's awesome, Mike. The community's been great. We're excited about these two grand openings because it's just in time for that big holiday season. And what a great way to shop, buy American products. Not only helps us, helps the manufacturer, but it really is a good, you feel good about buying Made in America products. And when we raise awareness now, it makes that much more difference. So the stores are ready to go. We've got 8 outlets in the Western New York area. Now, 2 are seasonal. You know, one's at the Niagara Falls area, which we closed for the season, and then one's at the Buffalo Erie Naval Park. But 8 outlets servicing Western New York is just awesome. We've made a statement, but again, I can't say enough thanks to my team. They just get the job done. We need them to go to Washington, Mike.
Oh, man, do we ever. But you know what, Mark? There's something I'd like to add to this. When I saw this, I said to myself, well, if there are listeners in other states, this may be an excellent opportunity for a small business, Larkin. Maybe a small business would like to open up in any part of the country where there's a SCORE group, and you already have a supplier, Mark. You know that his 7,000 items are made in America. Maybe there are some people that are saying, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'd like to go into a little business. I'm sure that they don't have to call it the Made in America store. They could call it Larkin's Made in America products supplied by the Made in America store. Something to bring attention to the products that Mark has for sale there in Buffalo, which could be shipped anywhere in the USA. Is that right, Mark?
Yeah, you're hitting on a really good thing. Our distribution center is 18,000 square foot, and we're tying our new store into it, so we're going to shrink Renee's area. But we have 7,000 products we just hit, and again, we support 500 American manufacturers. Our goal for 2016 is going to be very heavily on supplying, just like you're talking, other stores, other museums, other naval parks across the country, because people always complain how hard it is to find. Well, we found them. We're negotiating better deals. Our volume's going up. And it makes sense, Mike. And we want to help the VFWs, American Legions, these museums, or other stores have Made in America areas. And with us, you can have 100% Made in America end display, aisle, or section. And you can order the kit or the product from us. We'll break a case for you. We make it easy because we know inventory management is one of the hardest things for people to do. Inventory and payroll for any small business are the top two concerns, priorities, and you must live and breathe them. So, Mike, it's right where we want to head, shipping to other places. We kind of vet them. We make sure with our 3 letters of authenticity they're 100% Made in America. Now, again, everybody can't be 100% Made in America, but that was our concept, our core value, and I think it's going to get so strong in this upcoming election year with the times, with the economy still sputtering. Made in America matters, Mike. I know you believe, and you got to believe. You just got to keep this growing and moving forward.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And before I go to Larkin, I just want to say, guys, and all of our listeners and the businesses listening as well, I know that a lot of the big businesses don't like our message because it brings attention to the fact that their stores are filled with foreign-made products. And often when they say to me, well, that's the way it is, well, it has to end. I mean, it wasn't that way 25 years ago, and it doesn't need to continue. But the more people speak up, the more programs like we have, American Made Campaigns and American Workers Radio and David Muir is speaking up now, and even Rush Limbaugh made some comments, we have to do something about this. Small voices are now becoming bigger voices.
And Mike, and, you know, I just want to add one thing. You know, we support entrepreneurs, inventors, and you've got to believe that your simple purchase does make change. Don't let them, you know, complex it. They make it so complex. It's not that complex. It's simple. It's common sense. Buying Made in America products simply matters. And the way to grow even distribution is to continue as a consumer to ask for Made in America products. But this holiday season, think about it. You buy a product, you not only help that store, but you help that manufacturer. It's a gift of giving a job, so it's meaningful. You can't just chase the dollar like these big box stores. You got to create livelihoods. And, you know, that's where people, our listeners, got to know the importance that we raise. And that's what we do. We raise awareness with your show, Mike.
And, you know, also, Larkin, I want to just add to this before I ask you for your comments. Majority of the major foreign-made producers also fund the advertising that is given to all the media. So they bring attention to what they want to bring attention to and just cast aside what they don't want to be bothered with. And they want to, of course, do the products where they have the money to buy the advertising and fill, you know, fill their bank account with a little more money. But as time is going on, and I see the reaction of people, the stores are complaining that people are looking at labels, they're bitching about everything. And I say to them, well, the people don't have the money because they're not employed and this and that. So our small voices are starting to be heard. And people like yourself, Mark, when people tell me if Mark Andel can do it, anybody can do it. What do you have to add to that, Larkin?
Well, good morning, Michael. Good morning, Henry. Good morning, Mark, and congratulations on your two new stores. I'm going to step back a little bit and kind of support on one hand what you're saying and kind of disagree a little bit on the other hand. You know, we've always said all along, if it could just be 50%, if it could just be 50%, that we'd be happy with that. I think we do ourselves a little bit of a disservice if we attempt to make importers or companies on the state side that buy imported goods the bad guys. There are competition, and what we need to do is get to them so that we can create a larger share of market for the Made in America movement. Walmart probably never, and I shouldn't say, the big box stores probably will never be 100% domestic product sourcing. But they certainly can do a much, much, much better job than they're doing right now. So I think, you know, what Mark is doing is wonderful. It's a controlled level of growth. I had a huge question for you, Mark, until you broke in and gave the answer without me asking the question. And that is, you know, with multiple store operations like this, the biggest problem, it genuinely becomes bigger than payroll, is the control of the inventory. It's being able to buy right, but not only buy right, sell right, and understand what's moving and what isn't moving and what needs to be discounted. You know, inventory turns are... can be learned, but it's somewhat of a talent also. The people that you hire on the store level need to understand that inventory, and they need to understand what isn't moving and what they need to do in order, permission they have to come to you for, in order to make that a product move. But congratulations on two more stores. I think it's absolutely magnificent. I don't know that I want to wake up tomorrow morning and be 100% made in America, because that would kind of kill Mark's stores, and I don't want that to happen right away, because I think his message is a wonderful one, and you know, God bless you and your concern, and I know that what you do is driven by a desire to be successful, but it's also genuinely a concern for this country, and I thank you for that.
You know, Larkin, I understand exactly what you're saying, especially with the 50-50 balance. Now, Mark, how many electronic items do you have in your store?
Yeah, and again, you know, that's a big problem. And first, Mike, I want to just say, you know, Larkin, I got a lot of respect for you always, but even respect more that you understand the inventory management problem, issue, challenge. Because we live and breathe, I call it perfect ordering. Don't be out of nothing, but also don't order too much. And what we do as a team is hourly, daily, we switch store levels. And if you have a good day, you better reload as quick as you can. So we replenish really good. And it's such a major problem. Number one, a lot of the manufacturers that we dealt with were smaller. So here comes the Made in America. And, you know, we hit them pretty hard. But with better, more volume, you get better negotiation skills. But if you have one product at one store, you know, at our stores now you got to have eight of them because you got eight stores, and you better have two because somebody's going to buy one. But we switch internally with stores. We live and breathe it. That's the number one problem and challenge for even our listeners' business is that inventory. So, you know, thank you for recognizing that, Larkin, and that is a big big area. But, Mike, just your question again was the electronics. You know, again, we've got a light bulb. We've got nothing that takes a battery. I brought up a while ago there's a tablet being made in Buffalo that's like 60% made in America, but not 100%. But their goal is to make 100% tablet. So the electronics side, zero.
Which is
amazing, Mike.
Now, here is where we could do so much better in America, and we should have never allowed it to happen. But a place like Best Buy continues to send me all kinds of stuff that I should be prepared to go in on Black Friday and Small Business Saturday because they're offering a special deal on 100% of their inventory. And when I got the first notice, I said, yes, 100% of their inventory is all foreign made. So when I got the second notice, it said it's going to be 10% off. 10 to 20% off based upon the amount of the purchase. And I thought, well, that's very nice. I'm going to go there for the sale. I'm going to take them the little flyer, and I'm going to ask them, first of all, direct me to what you have that's made in America, because I'll take that 10 or 20% off, and I'll put the people on the spot. The sad part of it is we do have so many things that we can return to this country. As we talked to Ray Vicari and to Michael Marchetti and also to Ian Trammell, the biggest problem that they have is we have a lot of manufacturers up there in New Jersey and probably all over the USA that need to and want, this is the big thing, that want to open new lines of products but simply have no people interested in the jobs and no people skilled in the jobs.
Yes.
And this is a really big problem.
Mike?
That's part of the issue is that if you call for this great boycott, and let's just say that we all get mobilized, and when I say all, I mean all, in all 50 states, it's going to put a burden on the American manufacturing part of our country because they really aren't ready for this quite yet. I mean, this has got to be a level of controlled growth like we've never seen before, simply because we allowed our workforce, we allowed our manpower to get in the position that it's in right now. And it really is the biggest challenge that bringing manufacturing back to this country faces right now. And that's people that do not have job-ready skills. They got that college education, though, boy. They got that sheepskin.
Well, you know, I think that we had a couple great visitors, the gentleman from the Advanced Manufacturing Talent Network in New Jersey. He was very informative. That was Ray Vicari, and then Michael Marchetti came on. He's the manager of a Dream It, Do It program. And also Ian Trammell came on, who is from Mecha Force. And Mark, you remember very well, they told us things which were almost unbelievable to us. And that is why, as people listen to us, as people read the weekly commentaries, as more and more, and by the way, you know from being in Philadelphia, we have great people like Dom Giordano and so many others. Now they're starting to push the American-made issue because advertisers are starting to fall off because people are not spending the money. Advertisers fall off. It's the same thing with all of the bigger networks. They combine. We did that 25 years ago. Now it's time to open up smaller outlets that will make the products that Americans use on a regular basis. Larkin, that's your whole message through the SCORE movement, is to get people interested. We have to go return back to the way it was some years ago when people didn't have cars and trucks and trains to do that. They did trading amongst smaller people in smaller communities. Well, today we have all those things, but the small communities still need to deal with small people. The little person making the sweaters and the scarves and all. We get people even come to our center here wanting to sell things. They have no outlet for it. They don't have the quantities that are needed by the big box stores. So where do they go? They have to go to the little outlets, but the little outlets have no money to advertise, so they just depend on the people that walk in the door. It's been a real problem for some years, and we've been looking at all our national leaders for years and complaining about them, but I found in all that we're doing through this broadcast, through the whole Buy American Made campaign, is influencing people to let them know that their dollar being circulated here in the USA means more than they realize. And that's, they're understanding that now. They're going into the little stores, not only during Small Business Weekend and stuff like that, but they're going to the little stores on a regular basis. I go to the little stores and I talk to them about it. How are things doing and this and that? And some of them say, I can't afford to advertise in the local papers. I just can't afford it. Business is bad. And just like Mark always says, the fourth quarter of the year is the most important time of year for people to go out because they already have a mission to get a present for a family member or friend. So then why not support your local stores first, where you have a voice? You have a voice to speak up and say, could you find a little more American-made products possibly, or maybe deal with local people? Maybe put in a sign in your window. Larkin, your SCORE people would love it. Put a sign in the window. I am featuring locally made products in this store.
Yep, Mike, you know, one thing with this holiday coming up, Black Friday to Christmas, about 28 shopping days this year. It's an incredible time. It's what it's all about for retail business. The 10 months, are you're just keeping your lights on barely, and then it comes down to that November, December. It's so important. A lot of people, even banks I deal with, don't understand the importance of that Black Friday to December. That's what you wait for. I want to bring up, Mike, a while ago I sent you a little email on Roaring Spring paper products out of Roaring Spring, PA, Pennsylvania. You know, that they sent us an email. That's our school products line that we carry. It took us a long time to find them. And they announced they're going to go overseas with their product coming up in spring. So I right away got on, sent it around, and I talked to them also, how much do you have left? Should we buy some now? And they said, well, we're not going to do this switchover till March roughly. But with your connections, Mike, who's on the show, the senator, and that, boy, it'd be fun and worthwhile to really find out the CEO of Roaring Springs and see why they're doing it. It's a shame to me, we talk about paper products, school products, to lose a company like Roaring Spring out of Pennsylvania to overseas.
You know, Mark, you did send me that email, and I remember that Larkin read that email, and he sent me a very interesting response. Do you remember that, Larkin?
Yeah, I responded to the Roaring Springs people. I wrote to the CEO and told him that I'd love to talk to him about the decision, that I thought it was a decision that had far more reaching implications than those of just straight up profit and cost of goods sold. I've heard nothing. I didn't suspect I would hear anything from him. But again, you know, you almost have to talk to the Roaring Springs company to find out what motivated them to make a move like this. And I can promise you that this isn't something that they decided in the third quarter of 2015. They've probably been thinking about this as they face, you know, the problems that they have daily trying to compete with the five school supply distributors in New York who are buying from China and Japan and the Far East, and who are stealing their business day in and day out. So the choice becomes, do we survive? Now, this is how they see it. It's very short-sighted. But do we survive and buy from the people who are supplying them so that we can't compete? Or do we kill ourselves in a very slow anguishing death by continuing to put stuff on the marketplace that might be a little bit better quality, but it is way out of the price market. So it's impossible to say, you know, what motivated them to do this without having an understanding of where they are and the cost of goods field and all the rest of those contributing factors to find out exactly, you know, why they made the decision that they made.
Did you speak to the people at this company?
I did not. My buyer, I had contact back and forth, and then because then I said, boy, can I buy up the rest of your inventory or what, so we can continue to sell, because it was so hard to find school products made in U.S. And here Pennsylvania generally gets it. 50% of our product probably comes out of Pennsylvania. But, you know, Larkin, you hit it right on the head. I mean, you said it. You couldn't have said it better. But livelihoods, you know, I'm always thinking, and could government at some point, could they get assistance from the IDAs, or is there any way, did they fight the fight to try to get help? Or I just think it's a great story, Mike, but it's a shame that these livelihoods will be another company leaving Pennsylvania for you.
Oh, yeah. In fact,
I will tell you, in the past history, there have been ways to avoid and protect this, quite frankly, and they're called tariffs and import taxes and all the rest of that, which level the playing field. But at the same time we were doing that, we kind of made our retailers, not our retailers, but our manufacturers and wholesalers, a little on the lazy side, because guess what? All of a sudden they got protected by the government.
Yeah.
And they're not competing. They're not competing with their competition. They're just laying back and saying, well, I've got this covered because the government's going to put a tariff on anybody that tries to bring something into this country that's a little bit cheaper.
Yeah, and it's funny, I went to this manufacturing show last week, and you know, Larkin and Mike, automation, that's one great way to beat the labor cost, but then there's the investment in the machine. So, you know, there's a lot to be said. This equipment I seen last week in Chicago, incredible. Half the stuff I seen I could never afford, but pretty neat to see where technology is, and a lot of it made in the United States. It's just, you know, you always got that balance, livelihoods, automation, and keeping it in the country and still being competitive, right?
Well, that's
so
where the.
I've got to tell you a funny story as it relates to this. I was standing at a budget rent-a-car counter last night at probably 7:30, quarter of 8, at BWI, Baltimore, Washington International Airport. I'm getting ready to get on a jet and come home, where I am now in beautiful sunny Florida. It's raining outside right now. But at any rate, I walked up to the counter, and I had a few issues that I needed to take care of, and we were discussing them. A guy came out and walked up to another one of the registers or points of purchase and said, may I help you, man? And I turned around, and there was a lady with a luggage. She stepped up to the counter, and she started to order a car. And she said to this guy, this helpless little guy that was, you know, running the counter, probably a car jockey, started out as a car jockey. She said, I would like my car to be white, and my car must be built 100% in America, or I won't drive it. And the guy looked at her, and he laughed out loud. He thought she was joking. And she said, I'm not kidding. Well, she was right at the next register, and I heard her say that. And I looked at her just as this conversation was developing, and I said, you go, girl. And she laughed at me, and obviously from that point forward, a conversation ensued. And she said, I can't do it. I can't. I'm sorry. I just can't drive a car that isn't built in this country. And I said, you need to go to General Motors, and you need to complain to them, because they're the ones that just of late have started to move their more expensive automobiles to build back to Mexico. So this bring them back to America thing didn't last very long, because they're moving them now back to Mexico if they're the Lincoln models, the real high-cost models.
Well, Mark.
And I said, so do me a favor, press your buttons here. And I told her about the Made in America show, and she said, that's great. And she said, I said, so go find their headquarters in Dearborn or wherever they are and tell them exactly what you're telling the guys at the counter here. They need to hear this. And she said, I'm not welcome there. And I said, why not? She said, because I'm an arbitrator for the UAW.
Is that right?
She was an arbitrator for the UAW. And I said, uh-oh, you're over here already getting ready to make some noise. And she said, yeah, we're arguing. As a matter of fact, exactly what you're talking about, a specific model that they're going to pick up and move to Mexico that we don't want to see it happen.
Boy.
So, and of course, what do? You know, they come to the unions and say, sure, we can remedy this. We can fix this. This isn't very hard to fix. We're going to need this concession from your employees and this concession and this concession. And all of a sudden, it doesn't become such a big problem because you can't ask people to work for free. So, you know, it's a vicious circle. It's a vicious treadmill that we're on right now.
Yeah, Lark.
And I think the unfortunate part is Mark and I and Michael and Rich are not going to be here to see the remedy. It's going to take that long to fix it.
Lark and I bought two vehicles in the last month, and our company, the vehicles I have for delivering two rollbacks, which are flatbed trucks, and they're tired. I mean, we band-aided them and fixed them for 20 years. So I went out to find a cube van, a little mail truck type size van, to help with the Made in America, these stores and the 8 stores. Everybody's putting stuff on their laps and using their vehicles. My employees are awesome, the miles they put on their own vehicles through the years. So anyways, I go to a local Ford dealer who I actually graduated with, a guy that owns it, and I'm looking at the new Transit, and I'm looking, and I like the size. And then one thing I see from Spain. So my father had worked at Ford, and I always got the A plan, but I'm looking, and a young salesman came up, and he said, they're made in Spain, huh, overseas. I said, I want a Ford that's made here, assembled here. He said, these come over. Well, globalization, he starts to explain the whole thing. I said, well, read my shirt. I got my big Made in America shirt on, and a kid's young, only 2 days salesman. I said, he ain't going to sell me this. So I said, what about that truck right there? I said, where's that made? It's an E350 Ford. It's made in Kansas City. The cube body was actually sprayed. It's a fiberglass body made in Buffalo. It's a Unicell brand, and I said, everything's Kansas City, Buffalo. I said, that's going to be mine. And anyways, lo and behold, 3-4 months later, I just bought this Made in America as much as you can vehicle, but it stayed to our story. And on the other side, I bought a larger rollback. International truck is still one of the most made trucks in the United States, so I had to not go to Ford even. I went to International because most of it is made here. So both of our trucks we just landed within 2 weeks is part of our story. I stuck to our mission and our statement. Very hard to do, but I've been that lady at the rental car. I always joke with them, and don't give me a 4-in-1 either. And great to see. I kind of stuck to the plan. Very hard to do. These new Transits come in European style, but I do believe that Ford, Chevy, Dodge should have a percentage made in our country and assembled in our country.
Yep.
Well, I do see. I'll tell you, I was out just this past week with my daughter, Donna. She's looking at a new car, and we went to several dealers. I want to tell you that many of the cars with foreign names are actually made 80%, 77% here in America.
That's true.
So, when we went around, we were kind of shocked. In fact, we did go to GM to find out theirs was 56% the style she wanted, made in America. She went to Toyota, 70% made in America. Another brand was 77%. So I even went on our internet site and I looked up what percentage of your car is made in the USA. Some of the foreign brands moved all of their manufacturing here. Maybe they bring over a transmission or something, but the rest of the work is done by Americans. So, I mean, that's a good point, what you're saying, Mark, because I've experienced it just in the last few days. Gentlemen, I have to take a minute to acknowledge a few of our sponsors, and then I'm going to come back and let's continue this very interesting discussion. And as we're talking about Mark Indel and the Made in America store, I want to remind all of you that everything in that store is 100% American made. You can check it out on the internet by going to madeinamericastore.com. Mark will ship those items to you and make sure that you get them in time for the Christmas holiday. Also, when you go on our internet site, you'll find many good links up there. In fact, there is the link for the Made in America Month proclamation, which was presented by Senator John Sabatino of Pennsylvania. And there's also the Made in America Month information, which is discussing the schedule. On the November the 26th, you'll be getting together with family for Thanksgiving. Talk about American made. And when you go out on Black Friday, look for American made. We're just trying to get to that 50-50 balance. And if we can do that, boy, we'll have a lot of extra jobs in America. And then on November the 28th, it is Small Business Saturday. And of course, they're asking you to support all the local small businesses. And while you're there, also look at labels and see what they have available, and maybe even let them know that you'd like to shop there on and off, and let them know that you'd like to see more American made if they can get them. Also, I would like for you to know that on the front page of American Workers Radio, you can go for USA. Check that out. Mike Sessions is a great supporter of ours. And there are several other links on that site of guests that we had on the broadcast in the last few weeks. And best wishes to all of you as you prepare for the Thanksgiving holiday and the shopping season from our daily 7-day-a-week radio sponsors, and they include Polka Deli at 2719 East Allegheny Avenue, the Polish American Travel Service, 2714 East Allegheny Avenue in Philadelphia, Giorgio Foods, a symbol of quality since 1928, the Washington Savings Bank, Mr. Martin Bednarek, president in Philadelphia. Whenever you stop at a Washington Savings Bank, make sure you let them know that you hear about them on American Workers Radio or on the daily broadcast here on 860 AM. And greetings as well from Yolanda Konopatska DeCipio, attorney at law. Remember, she serves clients in Pennsylvania as well as New Jersey. And Karen Janot of State Farm Insurance asks you to check out State Farm for all of your auto, home, and life insurance needs. And if you need a great smile, remember Dr. Wojciech Zinn and Everest Dental. And Mr. Frank Spula, national president of the PNA, the Polish National Alliance, wishes all of you a very great American-made month. Please do shop at your local stores. And Leon Mankowski, attorney at law, offers his best wishes, as does Mr. Chester Chanowski of Serena's Auto Body Shop. And remember, Net Cost Market is there to serve you in two locations in Philadelphia. And Mr. Joseph Drobot, who is the national president of the PRCUA, wishes all of you the very best and encourage you to shop local, as well as Mr. Michael Steinman, attorney at law, who has his two offices in Philadelphia. And Dr. Eva Machak also wants you to know that you have to have a great smile at all times, especially when you go into the stores talking about you want to see more American-made products on the shelf. Make sure you go to Dr. Eva Machak and she'll make that smile even better than it is right now. And for a great time, the Sugar House Casino invites you to stop by and enjoy. They're going to have a lot of different events going on during the holiday season. The Sugar House Casino is located at 1001 North Delaware Avenue in Philadelphia. For more information, you can check them out anytime at sugarhousecasino.com. Also, best wishes from our supporters at the Polish and Slavic Federal Credit Union. They have offices in several states, and you can do online banking by going to psfcu.com. Well, you know, Markin and Lark, Rich is on travel today. I just want to say that listeners in the Pennsylvania who know me and, you know, work, know that I work in human services, so I have some very basic knowledge that keeping working age and able-bodied people in poverty has almost become a business in America. And that's caused in part because jobs left America in the last 30 to 35 years, and now we have more people in poverty, more people needing government assistance, and with all this time passing, still no national elected leader has said to themselves, my God, if we had more jobs, we would have less need for food stamp programs, unemployment programs, welfare programs, and the other programs that are offered to people working age and able-bodied people because they have no jobs. And now they're saying that the job skill crisis in America has totally gone up. And this is unfortunate. Now, as I watch the, have you watched the debates lately, Mark?
I've caught some of them, not all of them. I was out of town last week in that one, but I heard bits and pieces, of course.
Larkin, did you have a chance to look at it?
I did not get much of a chance to watch the Democratic debate, unfortunately. But I have watched the Republican debates for no partisan reason or anything. It's just
the timing.
The timing and the way my schedule shook out, it was easier for me to watch the Democrats.
You know, as
I
listen to these debates, I hear people talking about all sorts of issues, but I hear very little about jobs and creation of jobs and helping small businesses and big businesses maintain what they have here in the USA. In fact, as I sat with some friends watching this last debate, they said it seems that everything wants to be on the table as a giveaway, but nothing where we're helping our people gain skills and things like that. They say we want to support jobs. My question is, what type of jobs are they talking about? Maybe they should be advised by people like Mark Andel and Rich Loges and Larkin Connolly. What type of jobs are they talking about? Maybe they should contact Mr. Vicari from the Advanced Manufacturing Talent Network. There's no anything that they're talking about is insanity, with the exception of one person on that panel, and that's Donald Trump. He's the only person who really created private sector jobs through his own business. The rest have been creating jobs with the taxpayers funding their secretaries and chauffeurs and whatever. So as people stop and tell me that they watch the debates and ask me what I think, that's my opinion. The people who are running for office really don't have any experience of what it is like to run a business, number one. They don't have any idea what it is to do their thing, driving a car, being without Secret Service protection, doing normal things. So they start to live in this balloon, and now we have what we have. And the debates are showing me once again that the young people in America are not being discussed at all. They're talking about we want to give more education, our people need more computers, they need this and that. How about hands-on trade skills, Mark?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, we've got so many things going on. The debates, I was just talking to a customer, and I'm not sure how we got on it, but the disconnect between, you know, the politicians knowing what it takes to live week paycheck to paycheck and really knowing what it takes to be an American these days and raise a family, the husband, wife, and what it really takes. And I think we lose that disconnect by, like you said, Mike, they're funded by us, and they don't really know the value of a dollar no more. And that hurts, I think, in the election. Donald Trump and the whole thing, you know, he's talking for the people. It's interesting because he's stirring up the things we want heard. You know, God bless the people of Paris, France, and the ISIS attack, you know, happened last Friday. And Monday night, I caught the world news. The opening before that was Charlie Sheen and his issues with HIV. It amazed me that ISIS was second, you know, the attacks on Paris, France. And it just, to me, shows you sometimes how out of whack we get in our media.
You're absolutely... Blarkin, what do you have to say about that?
Well, again, I'm going to preface all of this by saying my comments are intended solely to be nonpartisan. I'm not supporting one side or the other, but they sure do, as political rhetoric has developed in this country, they sure do give lip service to subjects that really need to have a determined kind of answer. And it's everybody. It's not just one. It's everybody. They're all guilty. I didn't hear about Donald Trump creating jobs, but I did hear that Donald Trump wants to evict or send home 11 million people. I don't quite know how you do that. I think even making comments like that kind of discounts his logic. I mean, how would you deport 11 million people? How would you even begin to do that?
Well, see, if he had a plan where every illegal could register at their state capital as to who they are, what they've been doing to support themselves, that would be a more palatable way to do it. I don't think it's been thought out totally. I mean, that's happened in the past. After World War II, we've had those types of things where people, even immigrants who are here, would have to go once a year to settle at the post office to renew their green cards and all. There are ways to do it. But just evicting the people, you know, thinking they're going to go out in one long line of 11 million people, that's not going to happen. But there are ways to bring sense to all this. In fact, so many of the people had been calling me from the press in the last few days, contacted me, and I didn't really want to get involved in the refugee issue. But I did make a comment yesterday, and I would share it with the people because it may appear in the newspaper. And I said that, unfortunately, with the refugee situation, we have no way of vetting these people. That's number one. But more importantly, we have a growing number of homeless people right here in America. Not only do we have a homeless situation, but we have people in need of food, medicine, jobs. When American leaders solve all of these homeless problems and these employment problems, then we can open the doors up and let everybody else come in again. But I understand someone said to me, and I saw this on a YouTube video, that it would be better if we help those people resettle in their own country in safe zones where they would be able to stay there, because the best and the brightest want to get out of that type of a torture, and there'll be no one left to be sitting in the country when things could turn around to help the country come back to life. Larkin?
Well, it's really a complex issue. And I don't think any one party or any one individual can have the finger pointed at them that they've created this situation. But it's like the Made in America issue. We just kind of let it happen. We kind of turned our back on it and refused to address the issue up front when it started. I don't think there's a single American, certainly none that I know, that want to close our borders and don't recognize that we're the melting pot of the world. And that, yes, it is very true. More people want to come to America than want to leave America. As
right.
a matter of fact, I think they're looking for people that would consider leaving to make room. But, that's just not the case. But it was the political inaction by whoever. Because I just don't want to point the fingers. I'm not here with a political bent on what I have to say. I'm just saying that, you know, shame on us for letting it happen. I don't care who it was, because I now belong to a new party I just developed. Nobody's really heard much about it, but we're called the Pragmatist Party. And as everybody knows, pragmatist is somebody that likes to solve problems. And that's basically all I want to do, is just solve a problem and not argue about it and not turn it into a political football, but fix what's broken. Let's just fix it. And it's going to take everybody in Washington to fix this problem, not just one party, not just three guys. It's going to take a collaborative effort between every department and every party and every leader in Washington, D.C., and it can be fixed.
You're right, Larkin. And Larkin,
my grandmother used to infamously say to me, son, don't ever forget that this country is fast and smart enough to put a man on the moon. There's no problem too big for us.
Absolutely. You know, Larkin, we're paying these people. We not only go out and elect the people, but we then pay them to do a job. And they haven't really been producing the basics for us in America, for the American people. They were elected. They're collecting their paycheck. And what are they doing to represent us? If any elected official doesn't see that drives by any little mall or whatever and sees that stores have closed. A store closes, that means a person's out of a job. A livelihood has been lost. Possibly they had some people working at the store. More livelihoods are lost. They don't think about it. They don't speak about it. Yet they want to be all things to all people, but no plan to settle the most basic things possible.
So, you know, it's time to take a pragmatic outlook on all of these issues and fix them. Let's just And that's, you know, quite frankly, that's what makes, to me, in my estimation, Donald Trump such an attractive candidate, and I say that with quote marks, right now. And that is the fact that he's saying everything that people want to hear. I'm not so sure that there are answers, but he's saying what everybody wants to hear. And, you know, the remainder of the candidates probably ought to take note of that, that the country really is in a mood to talk about issues from a pragmatic viewpoint. And if you're not willing to do that, then you can't be in my pragmatic party. And I know the first one I'm joining, the first one signing into my party, is going to be Mark Handel. I know Mark's the first one in line going, let's go fix the problem.
I like it. I've got something to just to shift gears a little bit. I was reading about a bicycle manufacturer called Kent International, and they're producing 175,000 of their bikes here now in the States. In 2014, they shifted gears. Kind of tied, I think, Walmart released a Made in the USA program, which encouraged them to reshore. But it's pretty interesting. They wanted to make 175,000. They assembled in 2014 in the United States. And this year they're aiming at 300,000 bicycles assembled in the United States. So it's a start. So there is positive going on. And I love to find these articles that show, you know, people reshoring and the initiative to reshore and bring companies back, you know, so they can bring well-paying manufacturing jobs or good-paying manufacturing jobs back here.
You know, Mark, you're absolutely right. You're right, because when the people speak up at the stores, the managers do take a look around and they say to themselves, we do have an unbelievable amount of foreign-made stuff. So every proposal that comes in the door where they're trying to help a bicycle company or whatever to get into the American-made system, they're doing it so that their stores would take that reflection that they're mainly a foreign provider as far as household goods and clothing and things like that. The food is all, I would say, 95% American. But as people go out, don't think that your voices are being overlooked. The managers do hear that. And when proposals to make something or locally or whatever are presented to them, they will help those companies out.
Yeah, and this company was based out of New Jersey. Pretty interesting. And again, it was a global supplier now realizing, hey, people are demanding it, and let's build some of our bikes here. So that's great stuff.
Mark, what's the name of the company again?
Kent, K-E-N-T, International, Inc. And in Parsippany, New Jersey?
Parsippany.
Parsippany, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Parsippany, okay. New Jersey, headquarters.
The people in Parsippany, New Jersey, are used to having their names butchered.
But, you know, as we talked also, we were talking for months about getting the parents and the grandparents to speak up on behalf at the school boards in behalf of their kids. Well, believe it or not, many of the school boards are now talking about studies for restoring technology, maybe in another one or two schools in the district. I mean, this was dropped maybe 25 years ago, and a lot of these things are coming back. They're resurrecting because we have so many people who got great, I mean, great sheepskins, but no place to work. So knowing that those boys and girls are willing to go to a new training program that'll actually make them some money, like going into heating and air conditioning or plumbing or whatever, they are saying we have to restore this to some of our junior and senior high schools. So people, as you go out to your school functions, whether you're going to a fundraiser or whatever, don't be afraid to speak up to the administrators, the principals, because they're the people who take your message to the people who are funding the school districts.
Yeah, Mike, I got a good little comment about the American-made movie crew. I was sitting here Saturday at General Welding, and my brother called up and said, hey, there's a Will on the phone. I said, oh, okay, Will who? And anyways, I take the phone call. He said, how you doing, Mark? And one thing led to another. I said, what's your name? And Will, I said, where are you from? Well, Georgia. I said, how do you know me? I just seen the American-made movie. I was being taught it in school. I said, really? What state? And he said, Georgia. So it was very neat, the connection to school, this American-made movie being taught now as a curriculum. That was the first couple phone calls I've been getting lately. lately because they must be that's their course. It's a 10-week program. But also the crew got together with Clyde and Nathan and Vincent and Chris got together, and they're kind of thinking a little smaller and more local with the American-made movie and pushing it to not only veterans and schools and selling their products. So they reduced their costs on the movie and the clothing. So I wanted to bring that up for them. It's called the Save America Initiative. They're just starting again, so we tied with them. And, you know, on our website or American-made movie, you can get the clothing and the movie a lot cheaper than before, and they're just trying to do more good with it. So I think it's a great initiative for them for the, you know, this holiday season.
Excellent. And grandparents and parents and guardians, make sure you speak up about issues like this, because it's the future of your family and the future of your community that is going to come about. It's going to take some time, believe me when I tell you, but it really is up to us, people who listen to these types of broadcasts, people who go out shopping with the idea to buy something made in America simply because we want it, number one, we are going to use it, number two, and we know that it's going to support people who are in this country right now. We have lots of salespeople. In fact, Mark, how many more people do we need to sell foreign-made products in our stores? But to reverse the question, how many more people could be employed if we were making competitive items that they're selling foreign-made now, only foreign-made in our stores?
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I don't know that it would have an effect on the retail landscape. Do you think it would, Mark?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, a lot of people lose sight that even my mother worked at a company called Foresight Industries, which was supplied parts to Fisher-Price Toys back in the day when Fisher-Price made toys here. I'm only 5 miles away from Fisher-Price headquarters, which is Mattel owned now. Not one Fisher-Price toy is made in the country. But my mother made xylophone keys and the bells and all the parts to these companies. And it was simple work, but, you know, a lot of people forget you need simple work. So people need work to do. So I think, you know, Mike, with your question, you know, less foreign goods if you purchase more made in America. I think we got to continue to explain and raise awareness in how this spider web effect actually works and how it creates jobs, because I don't think some people realize, you know, if that part's made in this country, somebody's putting it in the box, somebody's screwing a screw in. That simple work that allows people to have their nice, simple American life. And I don't think people connect why we need these jobs that aren't real complex, but it keeps people working day to day and feeds their family.
You're right. And Mark, and that the one job leads to the payroll clerk, to the advertiser, to the shipper,
exactly,
to the person answering the phone call. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you can see by the clock on the wall, I can't believe we went through another hour. But people often tell me, I enjoy listening to you because it's like a group of friends sitting around a table discussing issues. Larkin, thank you again for joining us today and for giving us the full Larkin treatment. Next week, Rich will be back, and we're going to have a little more discussion on this debate issue. If you have a chance to look at the debate on YouTube, check it out. Mark, congratulations on your two new stores. I'm urging everyone to go to the front page of American Workers Radio and click on Mark Andel's link. He has two links on there. One is the Made in America store link that's on the right side of the page. And you can also click on Mark's mugshot and it'll go right to that link as well.
Thank you, Mike.
We start this holiday season, next week already will be Thanksgiving. We'll be on before then. But please do check it out. And I want to thank you, Mark, for posting up that link to American Workers Radio right on the front page of your site. That will help us to bring our message to more and more people. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, I want to wish all of you the very best. Remember, go out and shop American.
Have a good week, Mike Larkin. And Henry, post that picture of Rich with that cowboy hat on your site. We got to get him a horse.
I love it.
Say God's name out loud. Yeah.